In this part of Focus, we will revisit a topic we have discussed before many times. We'll be talking about children's books. And we thought it'd be a good time since we are coming up to a holiday period. Sometimes people like to exchange gifts. Maybe you're thinking about a book as a gift for a child in your life. We encourage that. But maybe you're, well, a little out of the loop as far as children's literature is concerned, and you might like some suggestions. Well, that is what we're going to try to do this morning as we talk with two guests. Here in the studio with me is Deborah Stevenson. She is the associate editor of the Bulletin of the Center for Children's Books, which is something that comes out of the library school here at the U of I. It's a publication that's designed to help teachers and librarians and then anyone who's interested in children's literature keep up with that field, because what they do is they look at everything that gets published, they write about it, they write reviews. So that's a way to find out about new books for kids. And it is also the kind of thing that that will be in the library. So if you're interested, it's the kind of thing that you can go and check out at the public library. Our other guest, Janice Harrington, she's just entered the room. She is head of youth services at Champaign Public Library. And we're pleased to have her here. We'll give you a chance to catch your breath. And at one point, you'll want to put on the earmuffs there. So when we have some callers, you can hear them. So the idea is what we'll do is we'll try and talk about some new and interesting titles, some things that they have seen and they would like to recommend. And if people who are listening have a book they would like to recommend, that would also be great. Maybe it's something that you've read recently with your children that you thought was really nice and you'd like to recommend it. That would be fine. We can also try to recommend particular books. Now, we've done this before, and sometimes it actually works pretty well. Somebody calls and says, okay, I have this child that has this kind of interest. What do you can you actually suggest a title? And because I know that the two of our guests see an awful lot of books and keep a lot of that information in their memory banks, we may be able to actually come up with a title or an author. So we'll try any and all of this kind of stuff. And all you have to do, you folks who are listening, all you have to do is call us. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Well, thanks very much.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to have you here. I don't know how you want to start. Should we just maybe start tossing out some titles? What are some of the...
Let me start just with some approaches to getting holiday books for children. I had the fortune of taking my five nephews and nieces out to a bookstore just this weekend to try to purchase books for them. And they really drove home the point that, you know, kids are individuals and they have unique taste. One child immediately gravitated towards a Barbie doll book that had makeup in the cover. And another one wanted the sequel to Harry Potter, while yet another had to have Calvin and Hobbes. And it was just, they were just all over the map. The other thing I had to be aware of in choosing for them was, of course, their parents' values. My sister is a woman of faith, and she wants her children to share those values, and she looks for that in her books. So that was another thing I had to consider in trying to get gifts for them. And, of course, the affordability question, when I took them to the bookstore, I immediately let them know that their Aunt Janice could not afford a $100 book, but anything below that would be considered. But if you can afford it, I think balance is good. If you can get them something that's their choice and then get them something that maybe is your choice, you know, something that you want to give them a legacy. I think when you're talking holiday gifts, you're probably talking books that will help them build a home library, books possibly that they could grow into, something enduring, nonfiction as well as fiction. I think people sort of gravitate more towards the fiction and they forget that kids have insatiable curiosity, and nonfiction works just as well. And kid appealing and enjoyable. This is not the time to go out and get, some classic written 500 years ago. What that horrible Last of the Mohicans. Do not purchase Last of the Mohicans.
No.
Just scratch that one off your holiday gift.
Especially if you haven't read it yourself.
Oh, please. And then also, in addition to buying books for them, but there's other options too, three I'd like to suggest. One I've mentioned before, which is magazine subscriptions are great. They're the gift that keep on giving. And there's some wonderful children's magazines coming out. African-American parents may want to know that there's a new one on Black history called Footsteps, put out by Cobblestones, and that would make a nice gift. There's activity books. I mean, think different. There's a book called Something's Happening on Calabash Street. And I use this more to demonstrate the point, not to say go out and buy this in droves. But it's a wonderful book. Just about the different celebrations in a neighborhood. But the book concludes with all sorts of recipes. And I could see, you know, and maybe you can give your child or the person that you want to buy the book for an experience. Why not get a book like this and read it together and then afterwards prepare the recipe? So you can sort of look at that way. Magazines, something that'll give you an activity. Or make a book. Make a book yourself and give it to the kids that you want to give a gift to, because a lot of family history is being lost, and this is an opportunity to recover those memories. So go ahead and make a book yourself, your own life, and give them that as well.
Well, those are great suggestions. I'm sure that it's still going to be tough for parents to, you know, for the parent who has the kid who wants to read Harry Potter, mm-hmm. and who is thinking to himself, you know, what I really would like to give you is David Copperfield, mm-hmm. and it's I'm sure always going to be sort of a struggle between something that you would kind of like to see them read, either because you think that it's really very good, or it's just one of those things that it's probably good for everybody to be familiar. You know, everybody should have read a couple of things by Dickens.
Why not?
So you can do both those.
Yeah, definitely. And Dickens, I think, is still a very someone that kids can relate to today. His stories are still there.
Okay, but James Fenimore Cooper, you're crossing him off
him,
the list.
Him,
but
don't
Dickens
get him.
Okay.
Don't get him. No.
Melville.
I'm still trying to get through Moby Dick myself. But I do not. But I do not rule. I do not rule out Moby Dick. But I do rule out Last of the Mohicans. That one, not for.
All right.
I think also it's good to remember that what a lot of people are looking for when they give David Copperfield are the kind of experience that David Copperfield brought them. And it doesn't take exactly David Copperfield to give that experience. I think you'll talk to many people who've read many famous and well-known and very respected books and had much of a similar engaged experience with it. And one of the things that I think people like Janice and myself who know a lot of the newer books can point out books that might provide that experience for them that they don't always know about.
Should we start our tag team of book suggestions now?
Works for me.
You go first.
Oh,
don't suggest any books that I intend to suggest.
Okay, my psychic powers are
okay,
in full
right.
force.
Okay,
I
go
promise
ahead.
I won't.
Go ahead.
Since today is, I think, a day where it's particularly relevant, what with waiting for the tapes from the Supreme Court, there is, it doesn't sound like your classic holiday book, but a fabulous book out this year about the presidency. It is a picture book of about 64 pages by Judith St. George called So You Want to Be President. The illustrator is Michael Small, who is the illustrator of the Caldecott honor-winning The Gardener of a few years ago. And he's blended this lively depiction with also a touch of political cartooning. And it's an overview, both lighthearted and serious, of the experience of being in the White House. It's talking about, for instance, if you want to be president, it would help if your first name was James. The most presidents have been named James. But it also talks about Nixon and Clinton and histories of difficulties in the White House, as well as, you know, pets in the White House, race, culture, religion, as far as presidents are concerned. It really is this glorious, joyous gallimaufry of the presidency that's extremely enticing, I think, to a lot of kids.
And what about if your name is Mary? Can you be president?
This book makes that point that it's still open for women, too. I think the interesting thing is at the end of that book, I think it's a shot of the White House, and they show Nixon going down the steps, head down, obviously.
It's not the White House. It's the Lincoln Memorial.
Lincoln Memorial. Oh, yeah.
Because Lincoln is staring down.
Right, right. But right behind him is Clinton coming down the steps, too. It's just...
you don't have to be a history junkie or a political buff to get the message of that picture off. An 8-year-old will see it immediately.
Right. It's really good.
So the title of that book is So You Want to Be President.
Right. I think I'll jump in with my sort of fantasy, and you can dove to it. I think top of the list, and probably at this point, most kids have already received this book for birthdays or whatever, but it has to be Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. It is a contemporary classic, and I myself didn't think that J.K. Rowling could pull it off, a 700-page book for kids. You know, I didn't think she could do it, but she did. It's a little darker than the previous four, but the Rowling allows the reader to encounter evil in that memorable villain, Lord Voldemort, and, you know, I don't really need to say more than that, but Harry Potter would be the perfect gift for a fan, and if someone's new to it, then buy the whole quadrilogy. quadrilogy? Is that
I can only count up to trilogy.
Okay, whatever comes after a trilogy.
Oh, tetralogy.
Okay, so that would be a winner. Another interesting little book is called Space Race by Sylvia Waugh. Did you like that one? Okay, what if you were secretly an alien? What if you came from another planet, but it happened so long ago that you've forgotten? And what if time is running out now and you've got to return to your planet? This is a wonderful father and son story. And the father and son are racing to get back to their spaceship, which has been shrunken and buried next to a statue in a public park. They have to get to that spaceship, reactivate it, and fly off. Well, of course, this is a story. Things go wrong. And poor Thomas Derwent, the young boy in the story, is alone in a hospital, hoping against hope that his father will find him. And it's a good story. Space Race by Sylvia Waugh. And I know you like I Was a Rat.
I haven't actually read that one. Ah! The Pullman.
Yeah. You haven't read I Was a Rat?
It's fantasy. I have to probably add Janice Del Negro's fingers.
Okay, old Bob and his wife Joan. This is an old couple, and they're alone one night. There's a knock at the door. They open, and there's this little boy there, and he says, I was a rat. And that begins their adventure, trying to deal with, you know, bumbling public officials and dastardly villains who want to harm the boy. And they're trying to find a home for him, and they fall in love with him. But this sort of falls into that idea of a book that is sort of Dickensian.
Pullman's very good at that.
Right. And the young boy is rat-napped in the story, and that begins his rollicking adventure and the old couple who's trying to save him and bring him comfort. And then there's that wonderful twist that this young boy really was a rat, if you know the Cinderella story. Hint, hint. And it was a good one. I Was a Rat. Anybody will love that one. Another one is The Wind Singer. Have you read that?
No. Who's the author of that?
That's William Nicholson. This, I would say, was for diehard fantasy lovers. Mm-hmm. The kids who will, they don't care whether it's good or bad or whatever. It's a fantasy. I want to read it. And this is for the fantasy lovers who have read everything and you're scraping the barrel what to give them, what to find. This is a new one out. It's a world very similar to our own. The Hath family lives in the city of Amaranth. And social rank in this city is determined by testing. High achievers have a high standard of living and the low achievers, well, let's just say it's not pretty. And this, again, is a story with good and evil, and you have this family caught in the middle. So it's not a story with hobbits or knights with wondrous swords, but this loving family and their battle to change the system. Fantasy lovers, I think, will go for this one. So do you have any?
Well, I've got a few, but I also want to comment on two things. One of the nice things about the first two, which I'm familiar with, is that they're fantasy for somewhat younger readers than a lot of the fantasy you'll find. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be a bit of a challenge when you're looking through the fantasy shelves and see lots of stuff for, you know, ninth grade and up. And these are fantasy that are really accessible to middle schoolers. Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to point out is, as you might have gathered, Janice Harrington is one of the most gifted storytellers and readers allowed in this neck of the woods. So
Why is that? Janice is making all kinds of faces in here. See, as every once in a while, I've entertained the notion of on the show here, we should just have someone come and read stories to us. Mm. We'll abandon the politics of the day, and we'll just do that.
See, but up. And Deb, what other books did you want to suggest?
Okay, apparently I'll be hit. As long as we're talking about the world apart from reality. I will actually kick back to Janice eventually. There will be the What Beyond Harry Potter. But there's a couple interesting books out this year with a science fiction edge that are, I think, very likely to appeal to a lot of young readers. One of them is Rodman Philbrick's The Last Book in the Universe.
Yeah, that was good. Hmm. That's good.
And that's a post-apocalyptic world where most of the population is blissing out on mind probes, but the narrator has a brain condition. He has epilepsy and cannot actually tolerate the intrusion into his brain. And he actually hooks up with an old man whose name is Writer, who's one of the few people who remembers books. And then they're going off in search of his beloved foster sister, who's very ill. And they join up with some of the people from the lucky side of the fence, as there tends to be in such dystopias, the proofs, the genetically improved people, in order to seek justice and a cure for his younger sister. Another book that I think a lot of kids would really like is called Blueprint, and I'm now going to space out on the name. It's from Carol Rhoda Books in Minnesota, and it's a German import. We don't get that many imports in the U.S., which is, I think, a shame in a lot of ways, but it's costly to translate into bring them over. And it's a book about the first clone And her name is Siri. Her mother slash sister's name is Iris. Her mother is a gifted musician who discovered she was suffering from multiple sclerosis. And being a self-involved and determined person, decided that she would continue her career by creating a clone of herself. Mm. It is narrated by the daughter slash sister, who talks about the extraordinary clash of wills and challenge of identity, which is, I think, an extraordinarily appealing teen theme, as she grows up to become so much like this woman who created her, but also so very different.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, the kind of books that you talked about. I'm sure that some people would be surprised to know that books for children or for younger readers were dealing with such serious and complicated themes.
I think I found that a lot in fantasy and science fiction. Really seems to be pushing the envelope for kids and dealing with topics that you're not finding in the more sort of mainstream books. So I think that's just maybe a nature of the type of book, the genre we're dealing with.
They're very philosophical literatures. I think a lot of readers who are interested in good and evil go there to really sort things out and explore possibilities.
Yeah. You want to try some nonfiction?
Sure.
Okay. A good coffee table book for kids would be Spirit of Endurance by Jennifer Armstrong. And my colleague here is cheering wildly. You can't hear her, but she is. Yes, it's a huge, large coffee table book that describes the incredible true adventure survival story of Sir Ernest Shackleton and his attempt to cross the Antarctic continent. It has original oil paints by William Maughan, as well as wonderful, stunning photographs by the expedition photographer Frank Hurley. But if you've got somebody who wants true story, who wants adventure, who wants edge of your seat, my God, did that happen, then get Spirit of Endurance or any of the really, there were some really remarkable biographies
that
have come out.
Yeah, there has the photographs have toured. They've been at some museums, and
they're at the Field Museum right now.
Oh, they are. And if you haven't seen these, and there is also a book, you should go down and see them because they're just really stunning. Some of the most stunning pictures you're ever going to see. And there also is a book about the expedition and about how these people went, what they went through, and the amazing fact that everybody came back to tell the story.
Yeah, right.
None of the people was lost.
And they ate gross things, and they still came back to tell about it.
And didn't have to take baths. Yeah, there's from picture books to books for older readers. The Shackletonia suddenly came out of nowhere, and we're very grateful because they're wonderful books.
Right. And if you're trying to pick a holiday book for a child, you know, narrow in what their interest is. And if you've got a horse lover, I'm not into horses personally. A horse, a good cup of cappuccino, I'm going to go with the cup of cappuccino. But a horse book that I read that I really did enjoy was The World According to Horses, How They Run, See, and Think by Stephen Budiansky. And it's a book that will definitely keep the interest of horse lovers. But what is, I think, unique about this book is it explains how do we know what we know about horses. It connects the conclusions with the research that produced it. And it's definitely a book that will, I think, help kids think better or think better about science and think it through better. Did you have some nonfiction favorites you wanted to toss in?
She keeps throwing me curves when I'm not ready for them. If you've got kids who are interested in building stuff, there are two very interesting books about building stuff from two different points of view. One of them is by Jan Greenberg and Sandra Jordan, who as a pair have written some of the best art books for kids in the last decade. And this is about Frank O'Gary, the architect of the Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao. Mm-hmm. They have a way of making accessible both the artistic philosophies of contemporary artists and also the process of building in many ways. And it's a very engaging portrayal of a guy who was building a house that all the neighbors hated and just didn't get along with people in his neighborhood. And now presumably those neighbors are going, oh, geez, he was a genius and we didn't know the whole time. What there is also for the more hardcore enthusiast of building is David McCauley's Building Big, a companion volume to the PBS series. The volume is taking a different track from the television series, and it really is focusing much more on the technical side. So especially kids who are really interested in the engineering aspect of it will find this an absolute field day.
Well, his books are so cool. Mm-hmm. If you have not seen them, I believe almost person of any age would be just fascinating because he's the guy that has done books about how things work and how things are built and done wonderful drawings, kind of fabulous cross sections, and so that you can actually see how various kinds of machines work and how the pyramids were built and, you know, ocean liners and all that kind of stuff. It's just the coolest. thing. Mm-hmm. And wonderful illustrations.
As long as we're talking about big things, you had mentioned the name of that book again so that people can hear it was Big Buildings?
Building Big.
If you like big things, another book to go for might be Elephant Quest. It's by Ted and Betsy Lewin, and it has stunning watercolors, very accessible language that pulls the readers into the author's experience on an African safari in search of the majestic elephant. The Lewins meet lions, water buffaloes, packs of wild dogs. They describe their experiences eating mopan worms, which are these big grubs, and they eat those by the dim glow of a kerosene lamp, and that might be a book
probably
that you
best.
Enjoy. I think so. And that was Elephant Quest. Spellbinder, have you read that? The biography of life of Harry Houdini?
Oh, no, I've seen that. It's
it's another really good one. If you've got, again, a kid who loves biography or loves learning history and true things, it's definitely a book to go for. Spellbinder, The Life of Harry Houdini by Tom Lalique. And just gives you a sense of what that man did, his athletic prowess, and maybe a little his rigor. And, you know, anybody who would lock himself in a can of beer and face the death from suffocation is somebody you should want to read about, I think.
I agree entirely.
Yeah. I'll tell you, just pardon me for interrupting here, but I'm thinking, well, we've already used it about half the time.
Oh.
And it hasn't been since sort of the beginning of the program that I've told people who you are.
Uh-huh.
So maybe that might be a nice idea.
Okay.
Introduce again, I guess. Okay. We're talking with Deborah Stevenson and Janice Harrington. Janice is head of youth services at the Champaign Public Library. Deborah is the associate editor of the Bulletin of the Center for Children's Books, a publication that comes out of the U of I. She's also the co-author, along with Betsy Hearn, of a book which is titled Choosing Books for Children, A Common Sense Guide.
Excellent book.
And
everyone
that,
should own it.
It's the kind of thing where
Janice.
If you... so do I, actually. And I'm told so does everyone. Janice told me once that if you didn't love her, it would reflect very badly on you. So... I said, well, I guess that's okay. Anyway, so that if you're looking for suggestions, that would be one place to go. You certainly can also look at the bulletin, which should be available in your public library. The children's department will have that, so you can look at it. And if you're interested in suggestions, go talk to the librarians. Mm-hmm. You will not be bothering them. They love this. Mm-hmm. They live for this. So if you have a child with a particular kind of interest, you're looking for some books, maybe there's a certain author, they have read everything by that person, and now you want to know, okay, now what can I find for them, or what can they read?
Or frankly, I think everybody should be talking to everybody about books. That's how literacy is going to grow. That's how we make our kids readers. That's how we put people who are in, that's how we make our democracy work. People who are intelligent, who have something, dialogue, who have something to talk about, are people who can read. So talk to everybody about books. Share the books that you're reading.
Yeah.
But definitely keep your local librarians in mind.
We have a couple of callers, and we'd be very happy to have, maybe people who are listening have suggestions.
Okay.
There's a book that they would like to suggest,
or
they're looking for a particular kind of book. Mm-hmm. We can see if we can help you out. We have a couple of folks here. The numbers here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We'll start in Taylorville, line number 4. Hello?
Hello?
Yes?
Yeah. Hi. I'm slightly annoyed that your focus is on the present when there's so much of the past. We could start with we as us. We could start with, for example, those marvelous things that Arthur Rackham illustrated, for example, Peter Pan and Kensington Gardens, the Rip Van Winkle. Those things have been reprinted, but it's quite special to get the originals. If you're filthy rich, you can get the signed copies, but let's not digress. Anderson's Fairy Tales, illustrated by Edmund Dulac. Those things that books like those show that you really care about your kids. That is one of the most marvelous, one of the most beautiful children's books I've ever come across.
Yeah. I don't expect the guests would argue with promoting the classics.
Totally agree. In fact, if you like classics, I would strongly suggest the new Aesop Fables, illustrated by Jerry Pinkney. Pinkney just knocks it out of the ballpark again. His watercolors are matchless. They're breathless. He brings these timeless classic stories to life, showing the diverse range of the human family in his illustrations. And it's a wonderful book that you'll want to put in any child's home library. Those great classics, definitely we want to give those to children. In fact, I wish we could say to publishers, let's reissue some of those.
Kai Nielsen, please.
And they've taken the opportunity to do that with some of at least the children's classics. The Trumpet of the Swan by E.B. White has been reissued and reillustrated by Marcia Liano. And again, you've got the story of the trumpeter Swan who's born without a voice. His father steals a trumpet so that he can have a voice. And then this is the story of Lewis's effort to become a musician, save up enough money to pay for the trumpet and restore his father's honor. So there's both the great classics that we all remember from our own childhoods and from school, but there's also contemporary classics to share from child. We live in a wonderful time. There is a wealth of literature of all kinds to give to kids, and it's all good. It's all good.
And I think while there's something very special about sharing with a child a book, like, as you say, the Arthur Rackham illustrated versions that you had, for instance, in your own childhood, so there's part of your history being shared with that child, there are also some wonderful new things coming up. And it can be a little deceptive sometimes what we talk about in this kind of session, because I think a lot of people are familiar with the Arthur Rackham but might not be familiar with, for instance, the new Aesop's Fables. So often we're trying to bring new things to people in the hope that they already know some of the older good things. Mm-hmm. But we agree entirely that there are some splendid things for children that have been out for a long time, and we hope always will be.
Well, let's talk with another caller here. This is Paris, and it's line one. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Hi. Quick question for you. I have to give gifts of books to my nieces. They're 7 and 9. I'm trying to prepare them for books that I intend to give them as they get a little bit older. I'm talking about things like Philip Pullman, Edith Nesbit, and so forth. So what I'm hoping to find, what I'd like to find, is something that would prepare them for English culture that would make it easier for them to understand the books, if there's something out there like that.
I'm not sure whether you're talking about looking for a British book for 7 to 9-year-olds, and some of the Pullmans are accessible, I would say, to 9-year-olds.
Oh.
Count Carlstein goes down fairly far, doesn't it? And Spring-Heeled Jack. Or whether you're looking for fantasies for younger readers to prepare them for this sort of sweep and scope of a Pullman. Were you thinking of both, do you know? Or
actually, I'm thinking of a nonfiction book. I've already got tons of fiction lined up. Actually, I've bought their books for the next 5 years. What I'm trying to do is to give them a little bit of a leg up on the culture so that they don't have any trouble with some of the terms like O-levels or prefects or things with the school system that are different that they might not understand. I wouldn't want them to put the book down because they didn't understand some of the language, some of the lingo, for example, in Edith Nesbit, for example,
sure.
Someone calling someone a brick, for example, they may not understand that, and I wouldn't want them to lose out on the experience and because of that.
I think for that one, she may want to take advantage of a wonderful free resource, which would be the local library. I think this sounds like one that you probably want to come in and have a face-to-face dialogue with the librarian, and that we sort of look through our collections and other sources to try to find something that would help you. Off the top of my head, I think I'm stumped.
Yes, I've had difficulty finding anything, and it seems to be a rare subject.
Right.
In the matter of recommending something, I've been delighted to find that there's been a reissue of Leon Garfield's two books, actually, Smith and Blackjack, which are excellent. So if you've got a young reader who's interested in history, Smith, I think, is wonderful, and it's just recently been reissued.
I also think it's great you mentioned Leon Garfield, since we'd mentioned Dickens earlier.
Yeah.
And I think Leon Garfield is the author that comes to mind when you're talking about a writer for young people, reasonably contemporarily, since, of course, he's the late Leon Garfield, that has many of the Dickensian characteristics and also a strong appeal for contemporary children.
Yes, and very historically accurate.
Yes.
So that might satisfy parents in that count.
That's a very good point.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Sure. Right.
Thank you.
I wanted to share some books, especially for African-American parents and families who might be listening.
Sure.
For this holiday season. Top of the list would have to be Wings by Christopher Myers, which I found to be just a stunning book. A young boy who has wings, but seemingly he can't fly, and he's taunted by the other kids. But it's at the hand of friendship that's given to him that helps him eventually discover flight and his own ability to fly. It's a moving story that will touch any reader's heart. And the art in this is brilliant. I mean, it really, Romare Bearden and the great African collages you'll find reflected here. Big J by Jerdine Nolan. Addie is a quote, house slave on Simon Plenty's plantation, and she discovers a young boy floating in a wicker basket, just like the biblical Moses. This is a young African-American child, and he grows up to be Big Jabe. And what he does is he helps the slaves to escape from the plantation and from the cruelty of Simon Plenty. She creates a very memorable tall tale character that children will enjoy. Shades of Black. I strongly suggest this book to families with preschool children. It's Shades of Black, A Celebration of Our Children by Sandra L. Pinckney. And here's a work that shows the diversity of the African-American family, that we come in every color and shade from creamy white to gingery brown. And it affirms, it celebrates, and it says with photographic eloquence that black is very beautiful. And that's an excellent book. Another one real quick would be In the Hollow of Your Hand, and these are Slave Lullabies by Alice McGill. The book comes with a CD so that you can actually hear the 13 songs that were sung in her own family, and she tells you a little bit about the songs, and you can hear those. And the last would be, not the last, there were so many excellent, excellent books about African-American history put out this year, but Hurry Freedom might be one you might miss. And this is about African-Americans in the Gold Rush and those families who are looking for role models or historical figures that will make their children feel a sense of pride will especially enjoy this book. And the discussion of Mifflin Gibbs, who established a successful business and was a conductor on the Underground Railroad and fought tirelessly for civil rights of African Americans in California. The man simply didn't seem to know the word give up. So those would be, I think, some books I would point you to if you're an African American grandmother, mother, aunt, or whoever looking for good books this year.
Though if you're talking for older readers who like fiction, I really love Jacqueline Woodson's Miracles Boys.
That was a good book. That was a very good book.
Amazing love story between brothers,
yes,
I'd say.
Yes, and it wasn't the grim ghetto drug that pictured all. Very much loving brothers. It was a good story. No. What was that again?
So Miracles Boys by Jacqueline Woodson.
That was a very good one.
Woodson, always a very talented author in picture books and books for older readers as well.
Let's tell you what, we have another caller here, and why don't we get them in, and well, of course, we're going to continue to talk with Deborah Stevens and Janice Harrington, and maybe I also should mention, we're now moving into about our last 15 minutes, so if there is, oh, I promise we can do this again, you know. It's not the last time we're ever going to do this. No. No, you could come back.
We've got to be talking fast. Blah, 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 blah.
No. Y'all can come back another day.
All right, okay.
Let's talk with a caller here in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. First, I just wanted to say, though this isn't what I was calling about, those last suggestions are great, and I hope Caucasian parents will also get them for their kids. I think those would be great things for us to introduce to our kids so they don't grow up to be like some of my students who don't seem to know anything at all about African-American culture. Okay, the other thing, though, the main reason I'm calling is I just had a kind of humorous response to the previous caller, which is that if her, I guess she was an aunt of these kids, right, if the niece or nephew or whatever it was, if they are reading the Harry Potter books, I'm sure that they will be very well-versed in British vocabulary. Hello?
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah,
good. Yes.
Because they are indeed set in Britain, and you learn things about British well, I guess we would say public school life. It's kind
prefect,
of like,
for example. Yeah. I mean, that, you know, that was one of the words she mentioned. They certainly talk about prefects in there.
Yeah.
So
you're right.
A lot of that does get picked up from context, and I would suspect, I was going to ask her and forgot, that that's in fact where she picked it up. That's certainly where I picked it up. Some books also have glossaries in the back. There's a wonderful new British book that's considered to be sort of Bridget Jones' Diary for the younger set, Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging, that in fact had Harry Potter in America has actually changed a few bits of vocabulary. What they did with Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging is simply throw their hands up in the air and put a glossary in the back. It's a wonderful glossary, too, just screamingly funny to read.
Right.
And I support your point entirely about which parents and who the books Janice are talking about are, of course, wonderful books for all readers.
Right.
It's one of these situations where sometimes people are looking for books and have a hard time looking in piles of books for their specific needs. But
I mean it as a criticism, but just that I do think that a lot of white parents don't think to buy those for their kids. And I think that's really important as a way, important way to bring up children not to be racist.
Right.
One little thing I wanted to add, too, though I haven't heard all your shows, so you may have covered this, but I just find that my son's a good reader. He's 8, but he really, when he's reading something interesting and complicated, he really likes to read to a parent or have a parent read to him, or we take turns. Mm-hmm. And so I find it's important for me to pick books I like, too.
Definitely, definitely.
And we've just started on The Chronicles of Narnia.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Good choice.
Together.
Good choice.
Well, thanks a lot. This is a fun show.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call.
I want to just, and then maybe you have something to add to this, too, just throw in two books that I would consider books dealing with faith that families might enjoy. This is In Every Tiny Grain of Sand, A Child's Book of Prayers and Praise, collected by Reeve Lindbergh. And here you have prayers, poems, bits of chants from all of the world's faiths, but one generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever, the scripture from Ecclesiastes. You have Gaelic prayers, deep peace of the running wave to you, deep peace of the flowing air to you. So again, families of faith might very much enjoy In Every Tiny Grain of Sand. Also related to that, a little different would be David versus God. You're dead. You're pretty sure you're dead because you're seeing angels. You're sure you're dead because all the other kids who were on the field trip with you in that bus, they look dead. You're not happy about being dead, so what do? Well, David decides that he's going to have a debate, because that's his talent. He's going to debate God, and if he can win this debate, then he'll be able to return to his life. But again, if you're a family of faith, it might be one that you enjoy.
Great.
I wanted to go back a bit to the last caller's point, because I don't think you can overstress this. She was talking about her son liking to read books back to her or with her. There's no need to make it an either-or for read-alouds or read-alones at any age. In one of my classes this summer, one student had been familiar with all the historical literature because her father had read it to her when she was well beyond read-alone age. To continuing to share books as a family is a great experience, and whether the child is reading to you or you're reading to the child, there's certainly no reason for a child to be rewarded for learning to read by never being read to again.
Mm-hmm. And what's going to make them a reader too is your own enjoyment. So the woman said she wanted to pick books that she enjoyed. Definitely. I mean, it's very important for the children to see that you love books, too. That's how you turn them into readers. If you love books, you might enjoy the amazing pop-up House of Inventions. This is a pop-up book, and each page is a different room of the house. So let's go to an interesting room here. Let's go to the bathroom. When you go to the bathroom pops up. There is, for example, your typical commode. But when you lift up the lid to the commode, it tells you the quality of plumbing went downhill fast with the fall of the Roman Empire. During the Middle Ages, people threw their waste into the street. Boots were probably popular. Each little part of this pop-up explains to you how that common item that you find in that room, who invented it and where it was invented. Is that clear what I just... So,
for example, put the lid down on the toilet. Yeah.
Put the lid down. I did put the lid on the toilet. So, you know, if you go into the kitchen, it tells you who invented the vacuum cleaner or who invented the refrigerator. Each little thing, you can open it's a great pop-up book. Lots of fun. Even adults would have fun with this one. So, do you know when the toaster was discovered or created?
I have no idea. Tell us.
You don't know? The first pop-up toaster was created in 1927.
Hmm. I'm still thinking about full frontal snogging, actually. I haven't been able to get that out of my mind.
None of us have been the same. It's a hysterical book. The author is Louise Renison. We've graded it, I think, for sixth grade and up, but I know Janice Del Negro's daughter, who is, I believe, how old is Miranda? Old beyond her years is finding it hilariously funny. It's just the trials and tribulation of a teenager. Couple other books that I'll just toss into the hopper in honor of the day. One of the most wonderful books this year is called Blizzard by Jim Murphy. And it's the story of the 1888 great blizzard that paralyzed the Northeast. And Murphy, who is an amazingly gifted historian for young people, has combined primary sources, so he's relating directly people's experiences in the blizzard, with some cultural and historical assessment of just what the mistakes were that caused this to be such a terrible tragedy for the Northeast, what they had done, what they hadn't done, why it might happen again and why it might not.
Right.
Let's take another call here, because we're getting close on time. In Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I wanted to get a clarification on a title you mentioned. I talked to you earlier about my nieces. Someone mentioned a book that might deal with, had a glossary that is four English terms, Angus something or other, and I wanted to get the full title.
Okay, it's Angus, comma, thongs.
I'm
like
sorry?
Thongs, T-H-O-N-G-S.
Okay.
And full frontal snogging.
Okay.
And I don't need to explain to you about snogging.
Right. And the author is?
Louise Renison, R-E-N-N-I-S-O-N.
R-E-N-N-I-S-O-N. O-N, thank you. What age is this book for, incidentally?
I would say, most conservatively, probably sixth grade and up. She's, I believe, 13. But readers younger than that have definitely enjoyed it. And depending on reading sophistication and parental views, it could go younger as well.
Okay. Two things. I wanted to mention Margaret Mahe, and many of her works would be excellent for children. And the second thing, regarding Blizzard by Jim Murphy, there is a book by Richard Peck that deals with that in a supernatural sort of way. I believe it's called Voices from the Past or Voices After Midnight. That's what it's called.
Oh, okay.
And it deals with that blizzard in an interesting way. Mm-hmm. Thanks again.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have about 5 minutes left. If somebody wants to call in real quick, nudge, nudge, say no more. 333-WILL, toll free 800-222-WILL.
We can't leave without addressing the blizzard of wonderful poetry books, too, that have come out this year. One that I've really enjoyed was Voices, Poetry, and Art from Around the World by Barbara Brenner. And this is it stands out as a collection of poetry for children because it includes poets and voices across time and cultures. A very strong selection. You're not seeing the same poets that you see anthologized over and over again. And it's also filled with just museum-quality artworks that kids can enjoy. And again, that was Voices, Poetry, and Art from Around the World. Did you have a favorite poetry book?
Not a poetry book. I was feeling like I should end on something noble, but I'll opt for faux noble. There's a wonderfully enjoyable book by Meg Cabot, C-A-B-O-T, called The Princess Diaries, and it sort of Clueless meets the Grimaldis. An ordinary girl going to school in Manhattan is shocked to discover that because her father will not be able to have any more children, her distant European father, she is now the heir to the throne of his European principality, which completely changes her life, and she is now a princess going to school in Manhattan, and she doesn't really like it very much. And she has the breathy Alicia Silverstone voice that makes this just suck the readers right into the book and half envy her and half be thrilled that you're not in her position. It's just the what happens if something came out of the sky and made me royal. And it just, the pages whip by. You cannot get out of this book without finding out what happens to this girl.
You know, we didn't really mention anything for preschoolers. So they should pick up the Everything book by Denise Fleming, which has everything, finger plays, nursery rhymes, preschool concepts. It's there in a bright, colorful package that toddlers and preschoolers will enjoy.
New illustrated version of Walt Whitbow's A Little White Duck, really nice for preschoolers. Mm-hmm. For those of you who may be familiar with the song, there's A Little White Duck. There's also a lovely collection of board books by Rebecca Emberley that are bilingual English and Spanish concept books. Colors, shapes, forms and shapes and forms would be the same thing. Colors, shapes, opposites, and something else.
You need those books, huh?
I've forgotten my concepts. And they are splendid and beautiful and very straightforward about the bilingualism, which is an effective concept as well in its own right.
We have a couple other callers. Can we try and do one more?
Sure.
No. Yeah, Janice says, no, you can't.
Yes.
No, I'm sorry, you can't.
Go ahead.
Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to suggest that people consider giving books or money to their local school libraries, which can spread the access of books to kids who might not be able to make it to a public library or buy books. And I had discovered that our area school library had been decimated by a severe attack of fungus or mold when they shampooed the carpets and closed up the doors for the summer, and they came back and, golly, lots of books were gone. This is at Yankee Ridge. Mm-hmm. So consider doing that, too, when you're giving favorite books to your favorite kids.
I think supporting your library, your school library as well as public library, is a great idea. It's a good idea before you pick a book to give, however, to find out whether that's going to be suitable for that particular library, because you don't want to give a book, even no matter how much you love it, that isn't, you know, one they already have. They don't necessarily want another one, or that is one that sits their collection. Sometimes that can be a problem. But if you're interested in supporting your library, I'm sure they'd be happy to help you.
Sure. Okay, mm-hmm. One more. Champagne. Line two. Hello.
Yes, I didn't get the name of that wonderful pop-up book you were talking about.
Okay. The name of that book is, it's Robert Crothers' Amazing Pop-Up House of Inventions. It takes every room in the house, and it pops up a picture and shows you, tells you when that item was invented, including nylon stockings. And Crothers is C-R-O-W-T-H-E-R, Robert Crothers.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, I think we're about at the point where we're going to have to stop for this time around. With promise, though, I'm sure we can do this again. Honestly, really, I wouldn't kid you. And we could have our guests back and talk some more. But in the meantime, you're looking for book suggestions, go to the library. Talk with the librarians there. They would be very happy to help you out.
Definitely. And also call the Center for the Study of...
Center for Children's Books.
Thank you, Deborah.
All right. Publishers of The Bulletin, and they're at here at the U of I in the Library School. And that's also a publication that you should be able to find in the library and that you can look at because they do review all the new books that come out, or at least they review the ones that they think are good, are worth recommending. So to our guests, Deborah Stevenson, Janice Harrington, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you
for being here.